This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on Talk Louisiana, we'll visit with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate, on what's going on in the regular session with lawmakers scurrying to wrap up the regular session in hopes of convening for a special session on the budget with the fiscal cliff in the offing now less than 2 months away. Also, Bernie Pinsonat, the well-known pollster in Louisiana, on what happens in Louisiana politics. It wasn't supposed to be a statewide election year, but now it is, with Tom Shedler resigning and probably a host of candidates lining up to succeed him as Secretary of State. We'll talk about that and also the latest on Stormy Daniels, a major revelation for President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and author Catherine Reed on the landscapes of Anne of Green Gables. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing today, and your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Everywhere else, 877-217-5757. And you can always send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief, is with us for his weekly visit, the man who trolls the hallways of the Capitol for the Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana. Today, front page, Mark Ballard has a story, Shedler's aide actions a shock. Interim says he had no knowledge of sexual misconduct allegations. We're talking about Kyle Ardoin, who now is the interim Secretary of State. What's going on now that Tom Shedler has called it a day, Mark Ballard?
Well, what we were seeing a lot of at the state capitol yesterday and on Tuesday night was this kind of call of, well, if Tom Shedler's top assistant knew, then he should step down. And if he didn't know, then why didn't he know? And maybe he should step down. And what Mr. Ardoin was saying is he didn't know. It came as a total shock to him when the lawsuit was filed. He was asked by a reporter to comment on it, and he went in and spoke to the Secretary of State, he says, and the Secretary of State said, well, I mean, he was expecting, you know, a total denial, but he says the Secretary of State said, well, yes, he did have a relationship with an improper relationship with a subordinate.
Interestingly, as the first assistant secretary, Kyle Ardoin's paid $130,000 annually. Shedler, by law, as the secretary, was paid $15,000 less at $115,000. Does that mean Ardoin has to take a pay cut?
Well, I've asked that question, and they're looking at it as well. So, I mean, theoretically, as the interim, I don't know. I mean, theoretically, as interim, he may not have to take a pay cut. This is fairly common throughout state government where the top executives in a particular agency make more than the actual leader of the agency who's, as you mentioned, whose pay is set in law.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
For example, Jay Darden, who ran for governor, ended up becoming commissioner of administration and earns considerably more than he would have if he had won the governor's office.
Well, and I believe that Shedler actually made more as Jay Darden's first assistant than he did once he became Secretary of State. So,
and Tom Shedler, as the Advocate notes, he leaves office by Louisiana standards as a well-off person. He's getting, what, about $9,000 a month for the rest of his life in pension benefits?
See, you're breaking up a little bit on me, Jim.
Tom Shedler's certainly going to get a nice pension, even though he's leaving office in disgrace.
Right. I mean, he does still get his retirement. He's been there for 28 years, I believe, off the top of my head. And so he's put into the retirement fund as a legislator, as a city councilman in Slidell, and as a staffer and secretary of the Secretary of State's office. So he gets his money, and it's about $100,000 a year.
More than that, actually. A little more than that. As Mark writes in today's front page story, that beginning May 9th, Tom Shedler will begin receiving $8,928.85 every month for every a month he lives for the rest of his life, and he's 68 years old. This seems to be in good shape, and who knows, he could live another 30 or 40 years. So Tom Shedler will be doing well by Louisiana standards. And as you say, this is the state system. It is one of the reasons why people gravitate to state government. The retirement benefits are rather good.
Well, they are if you're at the top of the game. If you are a rank-and-file civil servant, the retirement, you get a pension for life, but the but that pension is, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a year.
Yeah, it's based on the highest 3 years of earning, I think.
It is.
And so we quite often find these lawmakers who make in the 30s and 40s retiring and then going to work for one of these agencies and then making $100,000 or so a year for 3 or 4 years, and then they can retire based on the highest 3 years.
Indeed. And the legislative pension, when they had them, now the Constitution, we've all voted on this back in the 90s, did away with pensions for legislators, but he grandfathered in. He had been in the legislature for about a year and was able to grandfather in. I mention that is because at the time they were actually accruing their benefits at a far higher rate than what the rank-and-file civil servants were.
So you're saying that Tom Shedler benefits because he was a lawmaker before the change in law, but somebody elected now would not have the same opportunities.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Anyone who was elected after, I think it was 1997, does not have those opportunities. But he was able to, for the 12 years that he was in the legislature, to rack up quite a bit for a part-time job.
Well, the session is ongoing, and Governor Edwards had said he would like to end this by 2 weeks from now at the latest. Is he going to be successful in that endeavor?
Boy, that's a good question, because a lot of the House Republicans are saying, well, we don't need to do that. All the Senate has to do is pass the budget, and we're done, and they'll go home, and they may not show up for it. So it's kind of – there is that kind of tension that is going around the state capitol. Now the Democrats and largely the folks in the Senate are saying, no, we need to have a special session to raise revenues, and that would be in the last 2 weeks. They have a lot of work to do to hit that, I mean, to get these bills passed. And my guess is next week will be the tell is whether mm-hmm. or not they're going to be able to get enough done to have a special session at the end of the month.
A bill permitting casinos to go ashore is heading to the full House. Do you think this one will end up being successful as far as this legislative initiative?
Well, that's going to be a tough one because it does have an awful lot of opposition to it, to that bill. It eked out of the Criminal Justice Committee yesterday, where many thought it might die. And so, I mean, what people are telling me is that there's not much of a chance of it getting the prerequisite number of votes. Well, on the other hand, it has been kind of eking out of each step along the way. There's an awful lot of lobbyists that are working the floors, working the legislators to try to get just that enough votes to make it pass.
What about the Harris deal? Senator Kennedy this week spoke out against it. He says it's a bad deal for the state. What do you think?
Well, it's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary C Committee, Gary Smith, from down Norco way, says that he wants to take a look, a much closer look at what this deal means. There's an argument to be said that if Harris sells, they'll be selling also, and this bill passes, they'll be selling also a 30-year contract with preset fees that are going to be paid, and that would make it a far more lucrative deal for when they go out to sell it. And it sounds good for the shareholders of Harrah's, but Senator Kennedy and others are raising the point as to, well, that's not so mm-hmm. good for the people of Louisiana. We should get a little bit more out of it. And I believe the governor's office and a lot of the legislators are meeting behind closed doors to try to figure this out, to see, you know, can they get more, or would they behoove them just to scrap the whole deal?
And last time when Harrah's got a 30-year deal, the company paid $150 million up front, and that was money 30 years ago, which probably means like paying $300 million up front now. The state could use that money. but this is not in the deal.
Exactly, and that's kind of the things that they're looking at right now to see, you know, can we get more money out of this?
And last week when we talked to you, Mark, you were headed to a bond commission meeting, and that one turned out to be quite lively.
I walked in, I thought they were going to start throwing punches over it. It's hard to kind of explain it, you know, in a newspaper story, but there was considerable anger over a resolution, if that's the proper word, because the bond commission doesn't really do resolutions, but it was a resolution that would say that if a financier has the wording was very broad, but it was very much focused on the two bank financiers that would be handling one of these major infrastructure bonds have policies that they don't do business under certain circumstances with retailers who are selling guns under certain circumstances.
Well, it was Senator Kennedy and Treasurer Schroeder who were pushing this, and it ended up being an 8-6 vote, so it was very close, but 8-6 with them on the backside of the majority, and Kennedy no longer votes, of course, but it involves a $600 million bundle of three projects, including an interchange for Metro New Orleans New Airport, widening the interstate in Midtown Baton Rouge, and building an exit for Barksdale Air Force Base. These are projects that the governor feels are quite important and were in jeopardy if this had gone the other way. So that's basically how it happened. Oops, and I think we lost Mark Ballard, and that wasn't Mark shouting, but it's always good to talk with him, and we'll catch up with him again next week. Bernie Pinsonat is next, the esteemed pollster, and he'll be talking about what's going on now that Tom Shedler has resigned. This is Jim Eakster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Bernie Pinsonat is with us, the well-known pollster. He's been doing his thing for a long time. And, every day is an adventure in Louisiana. And we now are going to have a statewide election this year we did not anticipate. And Tom Shedler called it a day as Secretary of State. Not so much of a surprise that he resigned, but it happened within the last month that Shedler was under fire, accused of sexual misconduct. He's gone. And now, Bernie, we'll probably have several candidates wanting his former job.
Not several, a slew.
A slew, a plethora.
A bunch. No, it's pretty normal for Louisiana. You're going to hear people who are elected officials, state legislators, maybe some money people, but probably not. They're shying away from politics as we know it because of the the pictures of politicians in the media and the problems they have. So all of that does deter most people. So the people who are normally going to run are the people who are already in politics. And, of course, that means that you'll have state senators saying, I'm thinking about running. You're going to have state representatives say they're thinking about running. You may have a sheriff. You may have a parish president. So a cast of characters will emerge within the next 2 or 3 weeks. But only 4 or 5 may qualify who actually have a chance. And the big problem is if you can't raise $700,000, you're wasting your time.
And that particular job has been a springboard for other offices. Paul Hardy had it. He ran for governor, then was elected lieutenant governor. Jim Brown had it. He ran for governor, then was elected insurance commissioner. And then after him, we had Fox McKithen. Yes. He stayed as Secretary of State, but he ran for the U.S. Senate, and he was a major player in Louisiana politics. And then we had Jay Darden, who became Lieutenant Governor and ran for governor. And now we have Tom Shedler, who is on his way to getting a rather lucrative retirement package. But Bernie Pinsonat, any chance that a Democrat will be a factor in this race, or should Democrats just write it off?
As he asked me the question, ladies and gentlemen, he's smirking and laughing.
I don't know if I'm smirking. I'm smiling.
Okay, you're smiling. Well, the problem is money. It's the same problem applies to anyone who runs for this job. The challenge is nobody really cares about Secretary of State. They do care about the function of the Secretary of State has over elections. When I polled Shedler or any other Secretary of State candidate. The problem is nobody knows them. Nobody knows what they do, and it's a hard. They have a hard time explaining why that job should even exist. The job became more important as the election.
The jobs were merged.
When that job was merged, then it became important. And then, when Bernie Pinsonet ran a poll and asked about Tom Shetland and how did he handle his job as overseeing elections in Louisiana, he got very high marks. If I would have asked the same question on Secretary of State, it would have been maybe 20% would have even known enough about Secretary of State to even discuss it. So it's a challenge to raise money for a position that really has nothing related to it as far as doing something for people.
Well, Tom Shetler, by most accounts, did a good job, but this was trumped by these revelations. And Bernie, we're in a new day. You've been around long enough to know that through the years, many people in state government had romantic intentions with their employees, but now that's not something that's acceptable.
No, it's not only not acceptable. I mean, based on, you know, if it happens from here on out, I mean, you almost have to question the person's sanity, or should he even really have a job in government or running a corporation. The likelihood of being able to have one of these affairs with an employee or somebody that's under your control, I mean, means you're politically dead. You're going to get run off. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to embarrass your family. And anything you can imagine that bad could happen to you will happen to you. So the smart thing to do politically, and by the way, the best thing is being a human being, is to not engage in these type of affairs. But we will see those continue because people think that they can get away with something, or they don't think at all. And so this isn't the last one we'll see or hear of.
And that brings us to the President of the United States of America, who, according to his new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, paid $130,000 to Stephanie Gregory Clifford, pride of Baton Rouge, Scott and LaVille Magnet High School, born in 1979, class of 1997, former employee at the Gold Club here in Baton Rouge. And last night on Fox with Sean Hannity, Rudy Giuliani described the payment in this way.
That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through the law firm, and the president repaid it.
All right. He says the president repaid $130,000 to his lawyer, who paid this money to Miss Clifford, now Stormy Daniels. Bernie, it would seem hardly plausible that someone would pay $130,000 to somebody to not tell a story that was untrue. There must have been something going on between these two.
Well, you're asking me to talk about something that Trump and his lawyer knows, or she knows, and the president continues to claim that there was no affair. And you know, it happened 12 years ago. Was it because of his wife? Was it because he didn't want to be involved with her?
He was married at the time.
Well, that's my point.
He's still involved with her. They're still married.
No, I'm talking, he didn't want to be involved with a scandal of another woman while married. Plus, I think he just had a child. So there's a lot of reasons. And people with that kind of money, $130,000, by the way, is like a nickel to you or I. So it's not a big deal to him.
Well, I think it was one of the editorial columnists who said, if you get $130,000 for a story that's not true, imagine what a story that is true would be worth. So Stormy Daniels right now is, of course, milking this and is one of the most famous people on the planet. And it is interesting that this story has a Baton Rouge connection, Bernie Pinsonet.
Yeah, she's, depending on what happens with the investigation, she was famous in Louisiana when she was going to run for the U.S. Senate. And she was also, because of David Vitter's Washington Madam story and scandal, she became a item and was soon forgotten and left Louisiana, didn't run for the Senate. So now she's on her second go-around with politicians and being in the news related to her political whatever she gets involved in politically, there's going to be a scandal or there's going to be somebody who has to pay a price for her involvement, whichever way it is.
Today, there's a story about Senator Cassidy, who spoke yesterday in Livingston Parish, and he says certain groups of people don't like President Trump's personality or have been told Republicans are bad and Trump's bad, and I get that, but I'm speaking policies. You can't argue with some of the benefits, Senator Cassidy says. He claims wages are growing, unemployment is falling, GDP is growing much faster than people anticipated. Senator Bill Cassidy is obviously bullish for President Trump. This is the same man, by the way, who just called for the resignation of Tom Shedler for sexual misconduct, but he's apparently not taking much stock in the Stormy Daniels and the McDougal story, the woman who was a Playmate of the Year. All of this is just noise for Senator Cassidy and his cohort, Senator Kennedy. They like President Trump.
Well, Trump's very popular in Louisiana. I mean, the last time I was on here, you pointed out he set a record for the turnout of voters. His, what did he get, 83% of all voters and white voters in Louisiana voted for him, which are Republicans. Oh, yeah. So he's extremely popular, and his programs are popular. And backstories of this, or whatever else you want to call it, is Trump's supporters, and this is one of his states, don't buy into all of the stuff that the national media charges him with and the constant battle. Kennedy and Cassidy know one thing. Louisiana's going to side with Trump versus anyone else.
877-217-5757. Is Donald Trump going to remain popular in our state? We'll talk about it with Bernie Pinsonat after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, locally 297-5633. And you can email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. Some more time with Bernie Pinsonat, Southern Media and Opinion Research is his firm, and he does polls quite frequently. I imagine another one's coming soon from SMOR, Bernie Pinsonat.
Well, it actually won't be coming from SMOR. My partner retired, and I started my own company called Bernie R. Pinsonat, Inc., which most polls and people report polls in Louisiana is a Bernie Pinsonat poll.
Well, so a rose by any other name.
Right. So, but yeah, I'll take a look at the state after the session, mm-hmm. and the first thing I'll take a look at is where are we? What do the people feel about the legislative sessions? Where are we on the so-called, do we have a spending problem, revenue problem? Who are the candidates mm-hmm. for governor? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What are people looking for in the next governor? Mm-hmm. What do they see as the priorities? Those type of questions, which will be almost, you know, like your first look at the state and then the mm-hmm. prelude to the governor's race.
There's a question from Justin and Hammond about the Secretary of State's race, which will be a special election this fall. He asks, will the turnout be higher than it was for the treasurer's race, which was less than 20%? It's a very low bar, but I don't think we're going to have a massive turnout, but it should, I would think, be a little higher than it was for the treasurer's race.
I don't know why. Treasurer is actually a more high-profile race than Secretary of State. Kennedy.
There will be more well-known candidates, though, and each of them, I'm sure, will have a base, it would seem, that would perhaps get it up to 20%. But question about turnout, it's going to be a low turnout.
It's going to be a very low turnout. You keep having elections like this with nothing else on the ballot, you're going to continue to have very low turnouts. And I don't know what the solution is. I'm sure the law calls for the election to be held as properly as possible. And what goes along with that is basically very few people voting, not even close to 40% will turn out.
All right. And Holly in the Garden District notes that Bill Cassidy, who lives down the street from her, went to Livingston Parish yesterday to extol the virtues of Donald John Trump. Now, Livingston Parish, I looked the other day, went 85% for President Trump in 2016. East Baton Rouge Parish has gone twice for President Obama and went for Hillary Clinton, even went for Foster Campbell over John Kennedy. So this is this particular parish, the home parish of Senator Cassidy, is not necessarily the place to be shouting from the rafters your love for President Trump, is it?
Well, you could say that, but it really doesn't, you know, as far as his politics are concerned, it doesn't bother him. He doesn't need, he's going to basically split EBR, which is all he wants.
Mary Landrieu also carried EBR and lost by 12 points to Bill Cassidy.
Yeah, and Kennedy won by, what, 20? And didn't carry
EBR. And he lost EBR.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal to him. There is a division in Baton Rouge, which we're seeing in the politics of it, the mayor's race and anything else. So it's commonplace right now for Republicans to have about half the parish and Democrats have half the parish. So basically, it's, you know, one of the consequences is it's not that important. You're going to come in and you're going to get what you're going to get, and you're not going to get what you're going to get.
Which brings us to a phenomenon in Louisiana that every major city is largely Democratic except Lafayette. And yet Democrats who carry those cities in statewide elections, they can't win a statewide election with the exception of John Bel Edwards, who even won Livingston, if you can imagine that. Think of that. Donald Trump got 85% in Livingston Parish, and David Vitter lost Livingston to John Bel Edwards. But the rural vote in Louisiana is so skewed toward Republicans that it makes up for the Democrats having control of these large cities. That is a remarkable phenomenon.
Well, but you add to that Jefferson Parish.
Although John Bel Edwards carried Jefferson Parish too.
Well, yeah, he actually had a lot of elected officials that
St. Tammany. That's a Republican stronghold.
He didn't carry that.
No, he did not carry St. Tammany.
St. Tammany is becoming bigger by the day, and it's basically, I think, 91% or 89% basically Republican. So you do have parishes like that. You've got Ascension becoming bigger and more Republican. And Louisiana is a red state, one of the top three as far as red state white voters who are Republican. So the question you asked me about, can a Democrat run for Secretary of State? The first problem is really money. The first problem is money. And I also said the same problem applies to any other candidate, Democrat, white, black, doesn't matter. But the real problem is a lack of money available to them. We can carry forward to next year. And I've said, and anyone else is saying, that the probability that the Democrats will have many white Democrats left in the legislature are basically slim and none. There will not be a lot of them. The place will be, it's becoming, to me, scary, all Republican whites and very few Democratic whites, which is something that I grew up with 10, 15, 20 years ago. You had a few white Republicans and all white Democrats. Now the total reverse is true. And, of course, the legislature that John Bel Edwards is finding out, it's a nightmare to be governor right now with no money and the Republicans controlling the legislature.
How do you view his chances for reelection?
By the way,
we're 17 months away from the election. Yeah. Isn't that something?
Well, it depends on who the candidate is. And Kennedy is poking his nose into Louisiana politics on a regular basis. I'd say that I don't know if he would be doing that if he wasn't running. Vitter did it, and you could tell that Vitter was probably thinking because he was so involved. Most United States senators don't get involved in state politics, as Kennedy is now doing. Cassidy is not getting into the politics of the governor's race, but Kennedy is. So if he runs, you could say that Kennedy would be a any poll you look at, they're basically even, and before the race even starts. So that's not exactly great news for John Bel Edwards.
He does have $10 million in the bank, though, or thereabouts. And, of course, John Kennedy
can
raise. Always been good at raising money, but he raised money from these financial institutions when he was a state treasurer. He doesn't have that luxury as he once did.
Well, next year, there's only one thing on the ballot, basically in this country, of any consequence, and I think you have a Mississippi governor's race, but it's earlier. So you're going to have the entire country with all the Republican money and focus on Louisiana trying to beat John Bel Evers. He may survive, but we're not talking about little dollars. We're talking about $20, $30, $40, $50 million coming in here through PACs.
All right. Question from Tracy at the Capitol asking, any chance that one Bobby Jindal will run next year? He's got, he can do it now. He's sat out his term, and in Louisiana, you can run for governor after you've sat out a term. Bobby, I mean, are we going to have the resurrection of Governor Jindal?
Let me flat out say he has zero chance. The problem with Jindal is, and if he didn't see it coming, I don't know why he didn't. There is a problem with any politician who, there can be a disagreement over your policies. There can be a disagreement over whatever you believe politically. But Jindal, for some reason, allowed his image to cross a line. And it wasn't about his policies. It was about him personally. And he became personally unpopular. I mean, to the extent I've never seen. People who didn't like Edwin Edwards will almost make up stuff about what he did to give him credit because they like him personally. Jindal is just the opposite. He became one of the most despised elected officials I've ever seen in my lifetime.
David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on the air with Bernie Pinsonat.
Good morning, gentlemen. What does it say about the political hypocrisy and the opportunism of Senator Kennedy, who called for Shetler to resign, and it wasn't that long ago he was supporting the person likely violating laws hiring prostitutes, David Vitter, for governor, so he would get the appointment to Vitter's unfilled Senate seat?
It doesn't matter about hypocrisy. Here in Louisiana, I'm in the polling business. He's extremely popular, and unless something happens to him, he's probably the most likely person to run for governor. He's going to run as a very popular U.S. senator, and you can talk about him from Georgia, but you come into this state, and you're not going to find the hypocrisy or anyone talking about it.
And David and Bernie, he's taken the Washington press corps by storm. They love John Neely Kennedy. They love to put a microphone in his face.
He's become the master of one-liners. He's all over TV networks. He comes up with cute, flippant sayings that are requotable. So Kennedy's doing very well, especially with the media. He also, by the way, after the president's speech to the nation of whatever, the media asked him about it, he didn't say anything about North Korea, or did he say anything about net neutrality? Kennedy's not exactly one of the favorites of the White House because he doesn't jump on board on anything and everything the president does. And I know that to be a fact because I've heard it from the White House.
And that 14-7 vote last week, though, about whether the president could fire Bob Mueller, four Republicans voted with the Democrats. John Neely Kennedy was not one of them. He was with the president of the United States. And a good line from Neil in Hot Springs a few weeks ago, he wrote, Bernie, and I'm pulling up now, that the most dangerous place in America is to be between John Kennedy and a television camera.
Well, let me add something to that. And if you're at the state capitol right now, one of the backdrops there is, what are we talking about? Money. For the last 8 years, 9 years, it's all been about we have no revenue. And what was Kennedy's cute little saying that has really become one of the dominant themes in Louisiana when we talk about a legislative session? We have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. And believe me, every poll I run, people believe John Kennedy, not the governor, not Bobby Jindal. It's the backdrop that still dominates the state capitol.
We'll talk about that a bit more with Bernie Pinsonat. Still time to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. Back in a few minutes. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. And we're going to join Catherine Reed in a few moments. Her book is The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables. But finishing up with Bernie Pinsonat, and we're talking about John Kennedy, who has managed to become one of the best-known senators in the country by virtue of his media appeal in Washington, and he's always, of course, glib and eager to talk. But here in Louisiana, some people believe he's a shadow governor, that he's behind the scenes and is part of this group that does not want John Bel Edwards to succeed. And they have a philosophical belief that we do have a problem in the state with our budget, but it's not because we're not flush with cash. So is he really a shadow governor, Bernie Pinsonat?
Well, the shadow governor started with Edwin Edwards when Treen got elected. Edwin decided that I'm going to be the next governor. So the legislature literally waited around for Edwin's return, and anything and everything Edwin wanted, they did for him. There's not a lot of difference right now. I mean, I have bad news for people who think that it's not proper for the Republicans to thwart every effort the governor makes. They're of a different philosophy. Replacing him with a Republican governor is almost part of their being a Republican, to help out a Democrat so that he can be governor for 8 years. May sound wonderful for the supporters of John Bel Edwards, but that's not in the nature of politics anymore. Look, we're down to Washington style politics. Kennedy is in the background. He's going to stay in the background. He's going to be a big player. Sometimes later this year, he'll make a decision whether he wants to run or not. Until he does, nothing else matters as far mm-hmm. as any other candidate. But you know, whether he runs or not, he's still going to be in the background. That's sort of the way it is in Louisiana, especially with Kennedy.
Because, when do you think he'll make that decision?
Well, I think he'll be forced to make it maybe sooner than he would like, because the national power of the Republicans need to take Louisiana back as far as they're concerned. You have reapportionment coming. You have all the other reasons. So Kennedy can't wait till February or March of next year. He's got to make a decision probably, I would say, yes, to make the decision by early January or earlier, be November, December.
Yeah, I think he has to do it at least a year before the election.
Right.
That would be October, so we're not that far away. Bernie, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Always enjoy your insights.
Same here.
Catherine Reed is our guest now. She lives in the gardens and the mountains of western North Carolina, and her book is The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables, The Enchanting Island that inspired L.M. Montgomery. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, how did the natural landscape surrounding Lucy Maud Montgomery inspire her to create Anne Shirley, this character who took great notice of the natural world?
The answer is actually not that simple, but she inhabited the land in a way that I think we probably will envy today, those of us who spend more time inside than out. She believed that the trees, the plants were friends, that there was a whole community of beings out there that she loved and knew intimately, and her character, Anne, who we also love, felt the same way, and the way she moved through that natural world of this gorgeous little island up in eastern Canada has probably stayed with all of us who read the novel.
This is a beautiful book, by the way. The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables. And what is it about Prince Edward Island that makes it so special?
Well, probably partly it's its size. It's smallish as islands go. It's 140 miles long. It's relatively unchanged in a lot of ways, very pastoral. Agriculture is its top industry. Tourism is second. Fishing is third. Gorgeous white sand beaches. It's just a lovely, quiet, soothing place that the tourists have long loved. But of course, since the novel, they go there with a different goal than just seeing an interesting tourist site.
Anne of Green Gables is a best-selling classic. The inspiration behind the Netflix hit Anne with an E. And if we were to visit Prince Edward Island, would we see places that Anne Shirley saw, the Lake of Shining Waters, the Haunted Wood, places like that?
You would. The Canada's National Park Service has done a really wonderful job maintaining the house that inspired the Green Gables in the novel. The house has been maintained, so it looks like a late 1800s, early 1900s. Home, and the rooms inside are all appointed in period decorations. And certainly the land around, they've worked hard. So even though a forest comes and goes, trees age, they get cut, there's still a wood that looks and feels very much like the haunted wood. And certainly the lake is still there, undeveloped, quite pristine. So you can wander the trails. It's still the same birch trees and ferns and firs that Anne loved, that Maud Montgomery loved. So you definitely get a sense of this must be how it looked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you close your eyes, you can really imagine Anne and her friends having their Mayflower picnic and their and their outings to the brooks. It feels very, very believable that all this took place there.
Library Journal says this is not just a book filled with beautiful photos. It's a satisfyingly rich and layered combination of the visual and intellectual. And do you find, Catherine Reed, the same inspiration from the landscape in your own work that that Anne did?
You know, I do. I feel as though this is the natural world that supports all of us, and we really owe it to ourselves to understand it and steward it, you know, appreciate it. So it's always been the orientation in my work, the writings I did prior to this book. And the more I learned about Maud Montgomery as I read her biography and her journals, I truly came to appreciate the way she saw and inhabited the natural world.
Is this a tourist attraction of note?
PEI, the way people refer to Prince Edward Island, is definitely a tourist attraction. It has been so even prior to the novel, mostly because of its pastoral nature and beautiful white sand beaches. But because people came to know Anne, the land of Anne, through the writing, it's as though people want to really see and understand what fueled her imagination and allowed her to be such a free-spirited, you know, charismatic, garrulous child. They want to go. Tourists have been going to the island since the novel was published. So it works both as a satisfying place to visit and also as a place to revisit the literature that we loved.
Well, congratulations on The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables from Catherine Reed. Catherine, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
See you soon. And today would have been the 85th birthday of one James Joseph Brown Sr., better known as James Brown, the godfather of soul, born on this date in 1933 in Barnwell, South Carolina. He died Christmas Day of 2006 in Atlanta. James Brown was 73 years old. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 1986 and Kennedy Center honor in 2003. He certainly is a performer, or was one, that had few who were in his league, and nobody's been able to emulate the Godfather of Soul. Allie, I've asked her to pick a song, and I bet she's picked his signature tune. Here he is.
I feel good. I would not.
James Brown, born on this date in 1933, he would have been 85. 1933 brought some wonderful people like Ernest Gaines and Gus Weill. Dave Madden was born in 1933. A lot of great ones. And, of course, James Brown was a singer without parallel. Controversial guy, but what a performer. James Joseph Brown Sr. Actually, it was James Joseph Brown Jr. And tomorrow on this show, we'll hear from a young artist, if things go according to plan, who's coming to Baton Rouge, Emmy Sunshine. We'll also talk with Ed Cullen, for many years a voice on All Things Considered. And we'll find out what the former advocate columnist is doing in his life, the man who gave us Attic Salt for many Sundays through the years. Ed Cullen with us tomorrow. Until then, for Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.